Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
After our end of season awards last week, we decided that it's time to look forward. So obviously we're going to talk about recruitment and signings, because that's all that people are bothered about, as well as Love Island at this time of the year. Although, are any of us Love Island fans?
What is Love Island?
No.
I don't know what it is.
My wife watches it. I sometimes cast an eye on, you know, through the corner of my eye.
Sounds like somebody who's got the box. A judgmental eye.
I wouldn't say I'm a dedicated fan.
Who's the Borough lad who was on it?
Sam Gowland.
Yes. There was. I'm sure when John was here, he was trying to get Sam.
He's
Gowland.
A big Love Island.
No, I think he was trying to get him on for a trip.
He's a big Borough fan, him,
is he?
Yeah. I often see him in the Borough in the UN. Yeah.
If you're listening, Sam.
Yeah.
Give us a nudge and you can come in and replace Gar. I mean, so Chris Garbutt, Phil Town, Tyre, Anthony Vickers, myself, Dom Shoreham, and we're going to talk recruitment. Borough have made one signing this summer already, Phil. Adrian Bevington joining the club. How do you think that'll work?
I thought it was a really interesting signing. I think first of all, I don't think anybody believes for a second, and nor should they, that he's going to put a tracksuit on and start analysing players from South America, from Asia, from wherever. He's been clearly brought in as, I suppose you call it, as an organiser, as a guy who oversees the department, who will be making sure that it's as efficient as it possibly can be. I think we've had the nod that it's not going to affect Gary Gill, which is good to hear from our point of view, just being a friend of his. And I think the bigger understanding is that there's been so much change over the last 18 months, 2 years, in terms of people like Orta coming in and out. You saw Gary Monk's people coming in and out. Different managers, different philosophies, different people wanting different things from players that they signed. So I'm sure it's been really confusing. And just within the structure of the club, you've lost really important people like Dave Parnaby and Ron Bourne, who have a big say in youth recruitment and youth development. So it's been so much going on over the last 2 or 3 years. I think it's a kind of a line in the sand. It's to say, right, okay, we've got Adrian in. He's a vastly experienced administrator. He's gonna oversee the whole department. He's gonna presumably liaise with Neil Bowser and Steve Gibson, and also of course with people like Gary Gill and his scouts. And I think you might see a little bit, hopefully we'll see a little bit more joined up thinking, because I think anyone would admit that the recruitment over the past 18 months, 2 or 3 years, hasn't really made a lot of sense at times. You know, we've seen a lot of players arrive in certain positions, we've seen the wrong kind of players arrive, or we've seen players and you think, why have we paid so much money for him? So I just think there's an acceptance, and also with Tony Pulis saying a few times since he's come to the club that he was given a brief that he would be shaking up the club behind the scenes, and that was the real appealing factor of the job, other than being the Middlesbrough manager. So it's not a big surprise that they've appointed someone. I'm a little bit surprised it's Adrian, only because he's from the other side of football, isn't he? He's from the PR media administration side. So I don't think anyone's expecting him to actually go on.
I don't think it is that surprising, really, because one of the jobs he had at the FA was the head of Team England. And that involved things like a lot of logistics and organising the pathway from a shared identity between the reserve teams, the junior teams, the 21s and the senior side. So a lot of that background nuts and bolts stuff is transferable. I think it's an important position in the club. People hear recruitment and they think automatically, oh, they're the guy that signs the players. I think that's a more complicated department than that. It's about the academy and a pathway from the academy into the first team, which the club has spoken about in for years and years, but seems to have broken down in recent years. And it's also about, I think, the DNA of the club, and Phil touched there, you know, the club have lost a lot of people in recent years. I mean, a lot of coaches have left under the various managers. A lot of people were brought in under Orta, analysts, data men, conditioning coaches, all kinds of things. And a lot of those people were lost. And so there are big gaps in the structure of the club. But also, I think the loss of Dave Parnaby after sort of 20 years, there's a big institutional loss of memory and loss of culture there, and it's important that when you rebuild that, you rebuild it on a solid basis. And Adrian's got fantastic contacts, but he understands the way football works at every level, and he's got a lot of contacts, and potentially that is a good move, I think. But you know, I think we're all agreed that recruitment has been a bit of a dog's breakfast in recent times, with 3 summers in a row now where things have been pretty messy.
You talked there about him understanding football. Do you understand Borough as well? He's a Borough lad, is he?
Absolutely,
Borough fan. He's worked for Borough previously.
Died in the wool Borough fan, has always followed them. I think he has helped out the club at various points while he was at
England
the FA.
Games, for
got
example.
The England games here, for instance. He's always put in a good word for Borough. I don't think there's anything he could do about the 3 points. I don't think that was really his department. But yeah, I mean, and it always helps to have people within the organisation who understand the club and understand the area.
It'd be a great bloke to have, by the way, as the front, as the kind of the mouthpiece of the club, be it some sort of overarching PR role, liaison with Steve Gibson and with Neil Bowes, because I think he understands that side of it better than anybody else who works down there. He is probably the most experienced media savvy administrator in the entire English game at the moment, I would say, or one of them. Certainly, you know, he could go into battle with anybody from Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool. He knows the right people to talk to. Mm. He knows who, you know, he knows so many moves. You know, every time he goes to a game, and has gone to games for the last 10, 15, 20 years, he's gone into boardrooms and shaken hands and spoken with the real top echelon. So I think he'd be a great person. Maybe, you know, I'm not just talking about our situation with the club, but just to build some bridges. I think the club's media image could be far better. We've spoke so many times about things like not putting up big name signings when they arrive. The obvious one being Negredo. I mean, that's a massive PR on goal. Not to promote the club as a Premier League entity, as a big, you know, as part of the biggest global league in the world. I think that was a huge missed opportunity. Now, I don't suppose it necessarily get involved in that initially, but it'd be a real waste of a talent if they didn't, yeah, over time.
If we're talking recruitment then, Gabs, that obviously comes round to players who they're going to bring in the summer. We'll go throughout the squad in more detail, but just at a glance, to start with, what are the priority positions, do you think, for Pulisic's recruitment team?
I think, looking at the back end of the season, and I suppose many Borough fans would, you know, through polls that we've done on the Gazette website and so on and so forth, they sort of say, oh, goals and attacking midfields that we need to create and so on and so forth. And you know, them two games against Aston Villa sort of put a torchlight on that, didn't it? That we were unable to break down a crafty, wily old defence. But I mean, Borough scored for 14, 15 consecutive games towards the back end of the season. I don't think necessarily goal scoring has been Borough's problem, although I do think that is where Pulis will identify where he'll initially look to. I don't think any of the strikers necessarily fit the Tony Pulis striker mould.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot.
Yeah. So that's going to, we mentioned it this morning, didn't we? We were chatting this to say, who do you think will be Borough's number one striker next season? And it may well be somebody that's not at the club at the minute. A lot of it is going to maybe depend on who leaves. Is money going to come in for Ben Gibson? Is money going to come in for Adama Traore? I would imagine that it's probably going to be interesting in the two of them. Can Borough fend that off? Or do Borough cash in and use that money to go and invest in maybe 4, 5, 6 other places around the team? So, obviously it's early days. Not a lot is going to happen at the minute. But I would imagine, and I would hope, that Pulis is maybe on his tower to tower challenge. You know, the time he's got on that.
Answering his phone.
going through in his mind, and hopefully putting plans in place.
How do you think he'll approach it in terms of the players he goes for, the type of players he goes for, and the type of money, the sums of money he'll spend? after the Aston Villa game, unprompted, he talked about kind of, you know, that he knows what he wants, he knows what's necessary, and said that he won't be spending money for the sake of it. It was basically saying we're not going to have a repeat of last summer. Do you think there'll be? Do you think the money's there to spend? Do you think he'll spend it if the opportunity presents itself, or do you think he'll try and be shrewd and do things on the not on the cheap but clever?
Yeah, I think he's made that point so many times, hasn't he? About Steve spent enough money, you know, and he even reiterated that going into this summer. So not many managers will do something like that. That might be a bit of kidology to say, to other chief executives to suggest, don't be asking stupid prices for players anymore that we're going to approach because we're not going to be ripped off. I mean, you look, that the financial thing might take care of itself. If Borough decided to cash in on Ben Gibson and Adama Traore, you're looking at least, you'd have to say, £30 million. Or that, there or thereabouts. Now, that is going to be a huge, in championship terms, transfer kit.
Alongside any parachute payments.
I mean, obviously, Borough haven't got Besic anymore. So, for me, the midfield is the crucial area. Now, does Tony decide he wants to play through teams? Or does he decide, I don't think I can buy the sort of player who can break teams open from the middle of the park and go along down the flanks and with the long throws that we've seen already from the likes of Friend and Shotton, you know, pack the box, good delivery in from the flanks? Does he go down that route? He hasn't really given too many clues other than what you said, Dom, which was, I know what I want and I know what I know where I want to strengthen. I think he's got some good attacking talent. I think you're going to really struggle to get better players than Britt and Patrick Bamford, in my opinion, without spending a heck of a lot of money. You know, oh yes, Borough wanted Mitrovic, but really Mitrovic is a Premier League striker, isn't he? And he's going to go, you'd have to think, he's either going to stay with Fulham or go back to Newcastle and go to another Premier League club. So I think, you know, he's also got Rudy Gusted, who he clearly likes. I think it's going to be really tough for him to improve on that those three choices.
Well, for me, when you look at it from last year, I think the key is, or the priority is depth, because in the 11, you know, Borough could go like for like with anyone at the back end of last season. But we saw, didn't we, in those last few games, we saw at Villa when he threw on half fit at best, Gusted, in the latter stages. That
he clearly didn't fancy anyone on the bench.
He lacked players who he trusted to change a game. Now, the Jack Harrison punt, which is what it was probably worth exactly that when he came in, because it was a no-lose from Borough's situation. But both Harrison and Baker clearly, you know, they clearly weren't trusted by Pulis to go on and change again. I think he needs two or three more attacking midfield options that would then make a difference.
It's an interesting, really. I mean, I think he got a decent set of results out of that team that he inherited with virtually no changes in personnel, and he did it without a pre-season. And coming into a side that was a bit confused. And you think, well, if he did have a full pre-season with that group, he may get more out of it. But on the other hand, clearly, the vast majority of those players he would not choose. And if you started it the other way around and said, well, you know, which of those players are Tony Pulis players, and write down the team sheet, I don't think you'd have very many there that he would choose in an ideal world.
Has he not dispelled the Tony Pulis players myth, though, and the likes of getting the best out of players like Patrick Bamford?
Well, any manager given the opportunity to build will build a team in his shape. We know what kind of players he wants. If you look at the team as it stands, you can say, well, the central defenders, yes. Johnny Howson, maybe. Clayton, maybe. But there's none of the strikers who he would choose, I don't think. I think Gusted was playing as the least worst option to play in a particular style, but I don't think he's mobile enough or ironically good enough in the air to play that way that Tony Pulis would want. He was playing far too deep. He's not, you know, he doesn't make the runs. And also, I think that on both flanks, you're lacking the kind of players that Tony Pulis likes, i.e. can get wide quickly and put a ball to a certain spot in the penalty box for his attacker to attack. I think in an ideal world, he would probably bring in six players. But the problem we have is that and which he keeps on referring to, is he's not going to just spend the chairman's money, is that there's a lot of assets in that team now, and you can't just keep on bringing in players. He probably does what, I mean, the fact that he went for Mitrovic in January speaks volumes of the fact that the five strikers that he had in his books there, he didn't think they were good enough to lead the line.
I think we made that point, didn't we? That,
so he clearly wants someone up front different from what we've got. Mm. The problem you have is that they're all expensive players in that front end, and you'd have to unload probably two, maybe three, before you could even start a rebuilding.
Wait,
so I think the important element of recruitment this season is going to be getting rid of some of the players on the books.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, isn't it? Getting those players that you've got to fit £25-30 million worth of players who realistically aren't going to kick a ball next season if Tony Pulis gets his own way in terms of signings. But they can't just be allowed, they can't just hang around Rockcliffe making the tea and training with the rest of the first team group, as they describe it. So I think that is, as much as we talk about players coming in, I think that is going to be a really telling factor moving forward, how quickly the club can move on players who don't have a future.
I think, ironically, you speak about the Tony Pulis type of player. I think it's testament to him as a manager that you know, before he came in, I think the least Tony Pulis type player that you could pick is probably a Dama Traore. Mm. And you know, he managed to do what Aitor and was it Bruce who had him at Villa? Was it Bruce?
No, Sherwood,
Remy Gard. Previous Villa managers,
Agnew,
and then also Monk, what they couldn't do. And you know, this non-Tony Pulis type player pretty much got Tony Pulis to the playoffs. You know, I dare say, if it wasn't for the resurgence of Adama Traore in the form of him in the second half of the season, I don't think Borough would have got anywhere near. So, you know, I think what was glaringly obvious towards the back end of the season was the over-reliance on Adama, and Borough need to address that, because it was all down the right, it was all through Adama, and you know, Steve Bruce probably identified that and looked at it and gone, well, stop him and you stop Borough, and that proved 100% correct. So that needs addressing. The balance isn't right. I mean, I know, you know, for all the good stuff Stewie does and so on and so forth, he can't do what Adama, you know, can do. And if we are going to keep hold of Adama, I hope we do, then, you know, it needs to be balanced. It definitely needs to be balanced. You need to offer more than just give it to Adama, don't you?
Yeah, keeping hold of Adama. There's bound to be links, and there's bound to be interest, and there's bound to be calls. I think it'd benefit Traore to stay. I don't think it'd do him any harm. You know, look at how old he is.
I think it's a good point.
And I think if Pulis can do what he's done with him in 4 months, then what can he do with him after a full pre-season and with a team that's more balanced and set up to not purely be built around one man? If teams can't afford to stick two or three on him, and you know, I still think, I think Downing started to look tired, fatigued towards the end of the season, which is understandable considering how much football he'd played. He was one of the few players, certainly one of the few attacking players, who'd been just about a constant. And you think about all the football that he's played throughout his career, and I do think he catches up with you. I think Wayne Rooney's an example of that. He's played so much football for so many years, taking into account the summer football and the summer tournaments and whatnot. But you know, if you've got Downing there and another left-sided player, perhaps Downing comes an option in a more central position as well, and another option on the right as well as Traore, then I think suddenly, you know, he becomes even more dangerous and more threatening, because teams can't afford to.
I'm not convinced he would set the Premier League on a light yet. I know he had a good second half of the season, but there were signs when teams got about him and did a job on him.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, he will be playing with better players if he goes in the Premier League, you'd assume.
And in more balanced side.
But in more balanced side, but he'll also be against better defenders. So there will always be moments where he just destroys defences, because that's what he can do. But as we saw in Karanka's Premier League season, he didn't do it enough for his liking. You could say Aitor lost his nerve, you could say Traore didn't do it consistently enough. But for whatever reason, he's looking a better player, but I'm still not convinced that those factors in his game that make him a bit of a gamble aren't still there. I think you're 100% right, Dom. I think as a player, if Pulis definitely wants to go down the Traore route next season, it would be a great move for Traore to sit tight. He's so young. He's got years ahead of him. He's got all the attributes. Does he really want to go potentially back into the Premier League and find himself a part of the squad and then find himself out of the team again for five or six matches? I'm sure it'd be hard to convince him to turn down a move to the Premier League. But I do think it would, as you say, I think it would do him good to have another year with Tony Pulis.
Well, I think as well, you know, if you're his advisors, sorry, Gareth, I think if you're his advisors, you know, he's had, what, 3 or 4 years now of not halted progression, because he's clearly moved on as a player, but this is the first time that he's really found any momentum in his career, isn't it? And I think, you know, to risk losing that, to risk going in the Premier League and playing once every, becoming a bit part player at a big club, and then if it's not to a big club, then is it worth taking the risk to go to a kind of a middle of the road club, when the chances are you're going to be playing for a club and a manager who can get the best out of you, who are trying to get to the Premier League and have a chance of getting there a year later?
It seems as though he's a complex, you know, he's a fantastic footballer, he's got all the ability in the world, but he's a complex footballer to manage, I can imagine, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Not his nothing to do with his behaviour, but just the way that Tony Pulis has got him in a sort of path of thinking, the way that he's got him understanding what he wants him to do. You know, them two clearly get each other as a manager and player. You know, that's evident. You know, the way that he's turned him around. So maybe, you know, he does think, I do like the manager. I'm settled. Like I say, I'm playing football. You know, I'm playing. Yeah, I've got myself.
I think the key to keeping him and keeping him happy is to persuade him that the team next season will not play in a way that means he could be shackled every single game, because I think there were signs of frustration towards the end.
And you know, that's
it wasn't just Villa that did a job on him. Several teams did a job on him. Sometimes it was by double and treble marking him and stopping him playing, and sometimes it was kicking lumps out of him.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, the smile on his face when he's being effective is fantastic to see. He's exciting and he galvanises the team and lights up the ground. But there were times when you could see that it was getting to him, that no matter how hard he tried, that they were getting nowhere.
One of the reasons
for that is that the rest of the midfield is so slow compared to
exactly
him,
right, yeah,
that even when he gets into effective positions, the team aren't taking full advantage of that. So I think in order to keep him on board, keep him happy and keep him making progress, I think he has to be persuaded and the club have to deliver on the fact that there will be other options in midfield that will take some of the
blame. That's a challenge for him as well, though, isn't it?
But I think
to himself cope with being shackled and being targeted and being you know, zoned in as the man that teams need to
Well,
stop.
I think a bit like Trier, I think Downing's in a similar situation. You either play Stuart Downing where he's the strongest, or you start questioning where he plays in the team, because for me, his best run of matches was before Christmas, when he was kind of the only player in the team who was getting any kind of, who was really looking the part, wasn't he? And he kind of suffered when Adama came to the fore and became the sole focus. And you look at the midfield. You've lost Besic. You've got central midfielders like Clayton Ledbetter, Johnny House, none of whom are particularly speedy, and certainly Clayton Ledbetter are very similar in the way they play. It could be that he completely overhauls the midfield. You know, you've got players, you know, Clayton's been talked about as a potential player who could leave. There wouldn't be any shortage of takers there. I think he might relish a fresh challenge. Grant's coming towards the end of his time here. If he's not going to be the captain and the focal point in the team, does he really want a fringe role at his age? And then Johnny Howson, where does he fit in? Again, it's almost a compromise to where Johnny plays. And I know he improved as the season went on, and he's a very experienced player. But I look at all of those players, you know, and your Triori's and your Downing's. And apart from Triori on wide right, I'm not sure where they fit.
I thought Howson fit well into that midfield system. I think
as a three?
I think given the licence to... I think Borough are lacking was watching the Fulham Aston Villa game on Saturday, and one of the lads I was watching it with said Kevin McDonald would be perfect in the Borough midfield. The kind of real, you know, he's physical, he's imposing, strong. He's strong, athletic. He gets from box to box.
Dynamic.
But I think Johnny Howson adds to the Borough team by being in there.
I think those players I mentioned, Clayton Ledbetter, Howson, he's by far the most offensive player of those three.
Yeah.
And most versatile in that aspect.
The one thing I've said for a long time, and you know, Borough have got some tidy footballers. They're all good footballers in the middle of the park. Howson's, even Besic came in, you know, but he got forward, he could pass, he had a range, he could get about the pitch. But for a long, long time, Borough have never had a big, imposing, strong presence in the middle of the park. You know, someone who plays bounce off. I always refer back to like a Modiyami, a Thomas Huddleston, someone like that. And you know, it'd be nice to. I don't want to say a Borough's midfielder a week, but they're not big, strong, physical, imposing presences, are they?
They don't tend to stand out on the pitch, do they?
No. You know, I think when you need your midfield to get a real strangle on the game and to build a platform from, it's good to have a little bit of muscle in there, isn't it? A little bit of an imposing presence and a force that's going.
And Pulis likes that, you know. He's always liking his former teams. I remember you did a bit, Vic, shortly after Pulis had come in and looked at the type of players that he likes, and that was one of them, wasn't it? A real imposing.
There's the difference. I mean,
a real athlete.
That second leg, especially the second leg, I thought the first leg he was a little bit quieter, but Jedinak, I thought in the second leg at Villa Park, just completely trampled all over Borough midfield. Not through sheer brilliance of his technical ability, just because he was strong.
Well, even going away from the strength side of things, you look at the young energy of a Jack Grealish. You look at the Borough midfielders and Clayton Ledbetter House, and they're either the back end of the 20s or the early 30s. They're good, experienced players, and I'm not saying you shouldn't move forward with them. But when you see a young, vibrant player who fancies it, who's running around, posing like hell, and he's got his socks rolled down and his shin pads there, and look, but you just see that energy, that youthful energy. And Borough haven't had that for so long, and I'm not saying Grealish would go to the Premier League, I'm sure, but that kind of player who grabs the game, and like either the sort you're talking about, Gabs, the big 6 foot, you know, Tom Huddleston units who kind of just operate in the middle of the pitch and boss it. Or one of those vibrant, energetic players.
You have to
players.
Have a blend, don't you? It has to be a blend.
But I think at the moment, Borough look much of a muchness in the centre of the park. Even to an extent, Besic.
I think they're quite good at what we do in the park, but they're all very similar, all quite one-dimensional in like, they've got their skills, but there's no blend, is there? I mean, there isn't that person that can do a Jack Grealish role.
Villa Park was rope-a-dope, wasn't it? Borough could have kept playing until midnight. You didn't feel like they could open them up. They might have scored from a set piece if they got a lucky deflection or a really good delivery that was picked out a Borough player. But in terms of playing in open play, you just thought you could play here till midnight and Borough can't open these.
It was one of the first things Pulis identified, when I remember the interview with BBC Tees where, unprompted after a game, he said, "I want my midfielders to pass forward. I want them to take that responsibility of when they get the ball and not take the easy way out, look to move the ball forward."
I know we're talking about 20, 30 million pound footballers here now, and Premier League footballers in their own right as well, but you know, we spoke, didn't we, on the phone via text when the playoff final was on, and I said, just watch Thomas Kearney.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as he gets the ball, he goes forward. He looks to go forward, he can pass, he very, very rarely gives the ball away. He can move across the pitch, and you know, you're not going to get Thomas Kearney. He's Premier League bound, probably not with Fulham. You know, I can see him going to a big club, but somebody like a Grealish like that, somebody like a Thomas Kearney to go alongside a House and maybe Andy and other, you know, there's three positions there to take.
Can you imagine if you're a midfield?
You need a complete blend of everything.
Can you imagine if you're an opposition midfielder and you've got a player coming towards you and you don't know whether he's going to knock it sideways, go past you on the left, go past you on the right, or knock it long? So every time you're facing a player, there's four potential options, and you, best will in the world, if you're playing against Middlesbrough, you know chances are they're going to go square. So you, the amount of times the ball got as far as someone like Adam Clayton at Villa Park, for example, and you knew it was going sideways before he even left his foot. And I know whether that's culture, whether that's just he's lost so much confidence because he's been playing for so long as a defensive midfielder, because that's not his game when he was a 21-year-old. Adam Clayton was a box-to-box midfielder. I don't know what it is, but you kind of think, as you say, Gabs, you never see a player, Borough player, get the ball and just go hard at the opposition and turn them round. Apart from Adama Traore.
It's known that. I cast my eye over sort of opposing fans' forums, just getting a sort of an idea and a flavour of you know what they think about it, especially the Villa semi-finals. And numerous posts and threads on forums by Villa fans who said Borough are not middle of the park, they don't go forward. It's sideways and backwards all the time, and they identified that. You know, fans sat in, who rarely watch Borough, it was evident that Borough do not go forward from midfield.
At the back then, we've talked about attacking midfield, the defence was the one area really, goalkeeper and defence, that was untouched under Pulis. We saw from the first week onwards that it was Randolph, Schott and Ayala, Gibson, Friend, and that was very much that. Fabio came in impressed, but you knew for a fact really that he wasn't going to get in the week after. There's obviously the Ben Gibson debate and whether he'll come and go. Will that be the only change if Gibson does go?
I think you're probably light of specialist fullbacks. I think it is a position that you can fudge. I mean, most centre backs under a Tony Pulis system can adapt and play at full back. We know that he's done that over his career at different clubs, but I do think we're lacking specialist full backs of the type Tony Pulis wants, and that's on both sides. I think Ryan Shotton did a very good job for the first 2 months, then gradually faded a little bit. I think maybe got a bit ragged. I think George, physically, he will always give you 100%, but he gets done out of position and for pace sometimes. He can't deliver the throws that Tony Pulis would like. So I think there are areas of his game that the manager would probably look to upgrade on.
Jobs, Phil?
Go on, man.
Well, I mean, personally, I think a George friend of 2015 would be Tony Pulis' ideal. I just think he's just lost that physical edge that he did have 3-4 years ago.
Could be just age catching up with
him. Of course, it is.
30s, isn't he? Whatever he is, early 30s.
And he's always been a full throttle dynamic fullback, hasn't he, George? Up and down the pitch and smashing into tackles
full
every week,
full of energy.
So, you know, maybe that the sort of physical drain is starting to catch up with him. I personally think that he will definitely look to upgrade on both sides there in this summer. That would be my personal.
I don't think it's too much to expect either fullback, whoever it happens to be next season, to get forward more than. It was clearly a plan not to push the fullbacks forward, you know, as Tony, you know, he did sort the defence out. But it's nice to think, as far again, go back to what the opposition would least like you to do. Nice to think you had that worry that if the ball went back to the fullback, he's perfectly capable of bombing on down the right or the left and whipping in a decent ball. Again, it's down to what happens with Ben for me at the back. I mean, you'd assume Ayala will stay, and if he keeps fit, he's a real asset. You've got cover in terms of, I mean, Shotton could go inside if needs be, Danny Ayala, of course. And then, are there any of the young players ready? You know, that we don't have to worry about the keeper. Darren Randolph is a good keeper, but who's going to be the second in command? Is Dimmy going to be your first go-to keeper? I think there are a few issues there. Full-backs is a big... Tony's got to be practical. He can't change the whole 11.
Of course.
Well, on the Ben Gibson thing and Dale Fry, did you not think it was interesting that after the Villa game, the one player who he singled out, unprompted, was Dale Fry? The player who, you know, was it kind of an early pat on the back, very, very early sign that if Gibson goes, you know, I've got faith in you?
Well, I'll put this to you. You know, if we were to sell Gibson... and Fry was to start with Danny as the pairing. If he wanted to invest that Ben Gibson money, you know, we're talking about it as if he's gone. You know, if we were to get the money for Ben Gibson and he wanted to invest that in the midfield area that we've just spoke at length about there, would you feel comfortable enough with Fry and Ayala as you? Do you think that's a promotion winning central defence partnership?
I do. I do think because I think yes. Over the last year or two, at times has looked to have been a mistake in Dale Fry. But then, I think under Gary Monk, the defence were playing under that uncertainty as to if they were going to make a mistake, you were out the next week. I don't think that was a healthy way for any of the players in the defence or the midfield to play. And the year before that, the loan move didn't work out, didn't where he went to Rotherham and came back. So we're still yet to see Fry.
Yeah.
Get a real decent run alongside a steady partner, and I'm not talking 3 or 4 games. I'm talking 3 or 4 months. You'd need cover. You'd undoubtedly need.
If hypothetically you're saying that Ben Gibson's taken out of the equation, then I think you have to buy a seasoned, experienced leader to replace him.
To partner Ayala,
Ayala or Fry, but you can't take someone like that who's been the mainstay for 6 seasons out of the equation. Well, and not replace him.
It's a good point that
you'd undoubtedly have to replace Gibson. Yeah. Undoubtedly, you can go that. But I've seen more than enough of Fry.
Yeah, I think Fry could play next season.
But I think
Vic makes a very important point about I like a team that's got a spine through it of experience.
Yeah.
You've got Randolph, vastly experienced keeper. You take Ben out of that defence, and all right, Ayala's
getting hugely experienced with Shotton, Ayala, and Friendly.
It depends what you call leadership. I'm talking about potentially. So just in my opinion, I like the idea of having, say, Randolph and then Gibson, and then you had Ledbetter in the past. So right through the spine of your team, you had three senior players, vastly experienced, potential leaders. Then you had Friend, was another captain on the pitch at left back. you could start next season without any of those players apart from Randolph. So I think there is a danger that, and you know, I would imagine Tony Pulis being the character he would want, as Vic says, some sort of leader in that team. And whether that's at centre back, whether that's in the heart of midfield.
There are plenty, aren't there? Clayton, Downing.
But I'm not sure how much Clayton and even or Downing would feature next season.
Danny Ayala
should be.
Ayala's get that point, but
I don't think there's any doubt that Danny Ayala will be Borough centre half next season.
And I also see him as a leader.
He certainly won't be selling Gibson and Ayala.
No,
I'm not suggesting that for a second, but
yeah, so if you've got Ayala there, it's a case of does Dale Fry play alongside him? Or do you go and replace Ben with some of the money that brings in? I'm more than happy
to have Dale Fry as part of the mix, but I think if you sell Gibson,
you're going to need to.
You have to replace him with as good or better.
I wouldn't mind. I am always impressed with Aidan Flint.
I knew you were going to say that before. Yeah, he's been mentioned.
I'm always impressed with him. He scores goals. He's strong. He's a threat from set pieces, which Tony Pulis likes.
He'd undoubtedly be Borough's top scorer next season.
Absolutely.
He feels like a Tony Pulis kind of guy, doesn't he?
I honestly think for Niall would get at least 20 between them.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Probably not many like Bale for over kicks from the Champions League final. I don't think it'd be any there.
Although Ayala did try it.
He did. Yeah. I think he'd suit Borough's.
Finally, then, when do we reckon things will get rolling? Because it is one of those, isn't it, where the season starts in early August. You've got a World Cup to think about, so before you know it,
and the window's the 7th of August.
Before you know it, you could very easily be 2 or 3 weeks away from the start of the season.
It's different this year because the window's come forward, so we don't really know yet how that's going to affect it. Because effectively, in the past, football has taken a month off, and although yes, people have their phones, and yes, there's always discussions going on in the background. The main players, the players themselves, the agents, the managers, are on a sun lounger in Dubai. This year, that's different. I haven't seen any evidence of a rush for early signings as yet. I suspect it'll be another week or so before things start to filter through. But that pressure of the early window is going to put, you know, added momentum into
coach. I do feel a little bit sorry for coaches and managers. In the modern day era, because you start your pre-season training at the end of June, beginning of July, and your first 2 or 3 weeks are pretty much with your old squad. And I think it might be similar this year. I know the window comes forward, but even so, and I think, how do you prepare for a 9-month, 10-month season with players, obviously they do, but with potentially half the players missing, or you've got lads in from the 23s to bolster the... It must be really difficult to get a philosophy within a group of players and to get everybody on the same, singing from the same hymn sheet, when the reality is that you might be training with 4 players who will be gone before the first match is complete. So it is. I think it's going to be a messy window this season. I mean, you think about in the past, the transfer window technically didn't really open till the 1st of July. So you'd be sat at the end of May, beginning of June, like we are, and you'd still be 4 weeks away from the official window really opening. It's now open for most leagues, and it's going to close early, though of course you still can sell after the window closes, and that's another danger that I don't think will happen at Borough, but you will see the odd good player being sold from under a manager, and they can't go out and replace him because obviously some of the foreign windows close at a later date. So I think it's going to be a bit chaotic. I think it could drag on, and that's why I go back to the point I made last week about why the decision about Ben and Adama is so important. If you make that decision, you've got to make it early. Get that money in, and that's easier said than done, of course, but get that money in if you can, if you're going to sell. If not, let's move forward with them, build a team around them. But either way, I think that decision has to be made because you don't want to lose one of those players on the 5th of August and leave yourself no time to go and buy a replacement.
The players report back last week of June, I believe. So, like Vic mentioned...
Well, that's a week earlier than usual.
Yeah, but it's this little four-week period now, isn't it, that sort of, you know, players are away and things go quiet. Me and the lads are having far too many conversations about what's an offer in B&Q, so I hope it gets going soon.
what is an offer in B&Q? Cheers, fellas. Thanks a lot.